Thanks, David. Yes, so I will talk about classical algorithms for simulating quantum circuits and quantum Hamiltonians. And this is part of ongoing collaboration between Perimeter, IQC, and IBM. And the work I will present today is joint project with David, Calvin Rio, who is here, and Giuseppe Carleo from Lausanne Institute of Technology. And so I guess all of us believe that quantum mechanics is hard to simulate on a classical computer. Say if we use brute force methods like state vector simulator, then we can simulate maybe 30 or 40 qubits. But it is remarkable that there are some special classes of quantum circuits that can be simulated for hundreds or even for thousands of qubits. For example, quantum circuits with geometrically local gates in one-dimensional architecture can be efficiently simulated by tensor network methods. And here, simulation cost typically grows exponentially with the circuit depth. Also, we have Clifford circuits that can be efficiently simulated using stabilizer formalism and Gottesman-Neil theorem. Clifford-based methods have been extended to universal quantum circuits such as Clifford plus T. But here, simulation cost scales exponentially with the number of non-Clifford gates. I would say that tensor networks and Clifford-based methods are the most practical and well-developed, but there are many other ideas which are worth exploring, such as a fermionic linear optics, which works by mapping to non-interacting fermions. Then we have neural networks and machine learning-based methods, quasi-probability methods, discrete Wigner functions, and so on. And in general, classical simulation methods can help us to analyze quantum experiments, verify heuristic quantum algorithms, so these methods are very, very useful in practice. There are two different simulation tasks that I will consider, which are called strong and weak simulation. Let's say we have some quantum circuit acting on n qubits, and we want to sample a bit string from the final measurement, probability distribution describing the final measurement. The goal of strong simulation is to calculate output probabilities or output amplitudes. Say we can ask, what is the probability of measuring, say, 0, 1, 0 at the output? And the goal of weak simulation is to sample output distribution. This is what more close to what we would get if we actually execute the circuit on a quantum device. And today I will mostly talk about weak simulation. So our task is to sample output distribution. Most of classical simulation methods require some sort of reduction from weak to strong simulation. So we assume that a subroutine is available that computes output probabilities or amplitudes, and we can call this subroutine several times in order to sample from the output distribution. One commonly used reduction from weak to strong simulation is Metropolis sampling. And here we set up a Markov chain such that it has unique fixed point of this Markov chain is the desired probability distribution. And by simulating sufficiently many steps of the chain, we can get arbitrarily close to desired distribution. And another weak to strong reduction is what we call qubit by qubit sampling. Let me briefly sketch how it works. So we are given a quantum circuit on n qubits, and we want to sample from the output distribution. We sample output string x bit by bit. We start from the first bit, and then at each step we sample a bit from a conditional distribution given the values of all previously measured bits. And we continue this way to sample the full bit string. In this approach, a strong simulator is called roughly n times to calculate marginal probabilities. And we shall see that marginal probabilities can be very expensive to compute, especially if you use tensor networks or Clifford-based methods. So the question is, can we sample without computing marginals? And this brings me to our first result. We give a new efficient reduction from weak to strong simulation. We show how to sample output distribution of a quantum circuit by querying subroutine that computes amplitudes of quantum states. And the number of queries to this subroutine is relatively small, and we have rigorous performance guarantees. And we call this approach gate-by-gate sampling. So let me sketch how it works. So the algorithm consists of several steps, such that at each step we sample probability distribution describing a subcircuit spanned by the first t gates. Initially t equals zero, so we just sample from the initial state, all zeros, which is of course trivial. Then we go to t equals one, and we sample from the probability distribution obtained after the first gate. Then we go to t equals two, and we sample distribution generated by the first two gates, and so on, until we reach the last gate. What is very important here is that quantum gates are unitary operators, and a unitary gate cannot change reduced density matrix of idle qubits that do not participate in the gate. It means that at each step we can copy measurement outcomes on these idle qubits from the previous time step. Say, if you look at this example, we have a gate acting on qubit 1, and qubits 2 and 3 are idle. So we can copy measurement outcomes x2 and x3 sampled at previous step to the next step. But on the first qubit, we have to sample measurement outcome from scratch. Somehow this is the intuition behind algorithm. And the algorithm itself is just seven lines of code, as shown here. So we are given some n-qubit quantum circuit with m gates. The algorithm keeps track of n-bit string x, which describes measurement outcomes obtained after the first t gates in the circuit. And we loop for t from 1 to m. So at each step, we compute a set of idle qubits, which I denote capital A. And we copy measurement outcomes on idle qubits from the previous time step. And this gives us a small set of candidate bit strings that we shall sample at the next time step. So I call this set S. Then we call strong simulator to calculate probability for each bit string in S, and we sample according to these probabilities. And that's it. You can see that these algorithms makes roughly m calls to a strong simulator, computing amplitudes, and m is total number of gates. Let me make a few remarks about this algorithm. First of all, we need to call strong simulator only for this superposition creating gates, like Hadamard or X-rotation, and gates like CNOT that do not create superpositions can be simulated classically by just applying CNOT to a bit string sampled at previous time step. Then the same algorithm can be used to simulate adaptive circuits with mid-circuit measurements, such that the choice of each gate may depend on all previous measurement outcomes, like measurement-based computation. And also, this algorithm is robust to small errors in the strong simulator. So if the strong simulator computes amplitudes of some state which is epsilon close to a true output state, then we sample output distribution with error roughly epsilon times number of gates. Let me briefly describe applications of this gate-by-gate algorithm. I shall start with tensor network simulators. And here we represent an amplitude of a quantum circuit as a contraction of a tensor network. And then we contract with tensors using some algorithm. What is important is that tensor network methods can be used even if we do not have enough memory to store entire state vector of n qubits. The space complexity or amount of memory can be can interpolate between polynomial in n or exponential in n. And there is a certain trade-off between space and time complexity. Suppose we have a strong simulator that can calculate an amplitude of a depth D circuit on n qubits in time, which is some function f of n and d. So this is the cost of computing single output amplitude. And our goal is to sample output distribution of the circuit. And then we have two options. Option one is to use gate-by-gate algorithm. Then a strong simulator is called to compute amplitudes of subcircuits with depth at most d. So the runtime is roughly f of nd. Maybe there are some polynomial prefactors that I ignore here. And option two is to use a qubit by qubit algorithm. And then strong simulator is called to compute marginal probabilities. But first, we have to compute marginal probability to an amplitude of quantum circuit. And this conversion effectively doubles the circuit depth. So we first implement forward time evolution. Then we apply a layer of single qubit projectors that describe a measurement outcome. And then we apply backward time evolution. So now the runtime is f of n comma 2d. So we double the depth. So the form of this function f depends on particular contraction algorithm that we use. And let me consider two extreme cases. Suppose we have enough memory to store the entire state vector of n qubits. Then we can use state vector simulator. Its runtime scales exponentially with number of qubits and only linearly with circuit depth. And in this case, doubling the circuit depth changes runtime only a little bit, like factor of two. Now consider a limited memory scenario. We can use Feynman sum over paths simulator, such as the one proposed in this paper by Aronson and Chen. And this simulator requires only polynomial memory, but the runtime grows exponentially in the circuit depth, as shown here. And because the depth now appears in the exponent, doubling the circuit depth has more significant effect. So in this case, gate by gate algorithm achieves a quadratic speedup over qubit by qubit algorithm, which is really nice. So this Aronson and Chen algorithm is rigorous, but it's not the most, might not be the most practical one. And so we decided to look at state-of-the-art software for contracting tensor networks. And specifically, we looked at Cotangra library by Gray and Cortes. So we tried to simulate a two-dimensional quantum circuit on 7x7 grid of qubits of depth 16. We compare gate by gate and qubit by qubit simulators. We assume that we have limited amount of memory, which is controlled by this maximum degree of intermediate tensors. For example, if maximum degree is 29, it means that we only have enough memory to store a state of 29 qubits. So this table shows estimated number of floating point operations required for this simulation. You can see that gate by gate algorithm achieves an advantage of at least three or more orders of magnitude. As we increase amount of available memory from 29 to 35, the advantage becomes somewhat less dramatic. And this is in line with our theory that I showed on the previous slide. And also I should mention that we use a rehearsal version of Cotangra. It allows us to estimate number of flops without actually performing the contraction, which of course would be very expensive. So next let me discuss Clifford simulators. I shall consider circuits composed of Clifford gates and T gates defined here. The idea of Clifford-based simulators is to represent output state as a linear combination of n-qubit stabilizer states. The number of terms in this linear combination, which I denote chi, is called a stabilizer rank. For example, chi equals 1 if our circuit only contains Clifford gates. For non-Clifford circuits, this stabilizer rank chi is expected to grow exponentially with the number of non-Clifford gates, but this exponential scaling is surprisingly mild. So this table shows best known upper bounds on the stabilizer rank, as a function of number of T gates. And this is the best known asymptotic upper bound proved by David Kwasim and Pashayan. So M sub T is the number of T gates. By linearity, any output amplitude of such circuit can be represented as linear combination of chi stabilizer amplitudes, amplitudes of stabilizer states, and those are easy to compute. So if you use the right data structure to describe stabilizer states, computing amplitudes takes time only n cube. And because we have chi terms, the runtime for computing a single amplitude is scales are shown here. So the overall runtime of a gate-by-gate algorithm will be proportional to stabilizer rank, and we know that it's roughly this function of the number of T gates. On the other hand, if we use a qubit-by-qubit algorithm, then we call strong simulator to compute marginal probabilities. And because each marginal probability combines forward and backward time evolution, the number of stabilizer amplitudes we have to compute would be roughly chi squared. So the runtime of qubit by qubit algorithm would be quadratically worse. And this is, this sounds good, but it would be more satisfying to find examples than separation between qubit by qubit and gate by gate algorithms is more than quadratic. And we can do that, but it requires a measurement-based model of quantum computation. So we initialize n qubits in some fixed entangled Riesz state, and the computation is driven by a sequence of single qubit measurements. And for each qubit, we can choose a basis in which we measure this qubit, and the measurement basis can be chosen adaptively depending on all previous measurement outcomes. And the computational power of this model depends on how we choose initial Riesz state. And the standard choice is a two-dimensional cluster state. As was shown by Briegel and Rausendorf, this model becomes equivalent to universal quantum computation. And thus we expect that both strong and weak simulation becomes exponentially hard. But suppose we choose initial Riesz state as a two-dimensional surface chord state. It was shown that output amplitudes of the computation can be computed in polynomial time classically. So this was described in our old paper with Robert Rausendorf, and the algorithm works by mapping the problem to simulation of non-interacting fermions. A bad news for qubit by qubit algorithm is that computing marginal probabilities becomes a sharp P hard problem. Sharp P hardness means that these problems is essentially as hard as counting solution of some NP complete problem, like a preset or traveling salesman. And because a qubit by qubit algorithm has to compute marginal probabilities, basically we can choose the order of measurements to force qubit by qubit algorithm to compute marginal probabilities which are sharp P hard. So it's unlikely to have polynomial runtime. And meanwhile, gate by gate algorithm only requires amplitudes, and those can be computed efficiently. So in this example, we have a super polynomial separation between two algorithms. So this was basically all I have to say about simulation of quantum circuits. And now I want to change gears and talk about simulation of quantum many-body systems. So suppose we are given some Hamiltonian H describing a system of n qubits, and we assume that H is k-local Hamiltonian, which means that it only includes interactions among subsets of k or less qubits. And k is a small constant, say k equals 2 or 3. Psi is the ground state of H, and our goal is to sample the ground state probability distribution, which is defined here. And we make several assumptions. First we assume that the ground state is non-degenerate, and it is separated from excited states by non-negligible spectral gap. And non-negligible means at least inverse polynomial in N. We assume that we have a subroutine that computes ratios of ground state amplitudes. So this is our strong simulator. I will show how to sample ground state by making only a few queries to this subroutine. To make things simpler, I will assume that H has real matrix elements in the standard basis, but in the paper we show that this assumption can be relaxed, so it's not essential. Let me first describe a naive approach, which is the standard Metropolis-Hastings algorithm. It does not quite work, but at least it sets the stage for what comes next. We assume for simplicity that all ground state amplitudes are non-zero. Then we have a Markov chain on the set of n-bit strings, and at each time step we flip a randomly chosen subset of at most k bits, and then we either accept or reject the proposed state according to this Metropolis filter. It ensures that this chain unique fixed point of this Markov chain is the desired ground state distribution. If we implement the number of steps large enough compared with the mixing time, we can approximately sample ground state distribution. Our first result provides upper bound on the mixing time of Metropolis algorithm. remember that gamma is a spectral gap of the Hamiltonian, n is the number of qubits. But unfortunately, mixing time depends on this parameter S, which we call sensitivity. It quantifies how much ground state amplitudes can change if we flip at most k bits. We have rapid mixing only if this sensitivity parameter is at most a polynomial in N. We can prove that this is indeed the case, but only for a special class of Hamiltonians which are called stochastic or sign problem free. But for general Hamiltonians which are non-stochastic, this sensitivity parameter S can be arbitrarily large, and so we don't have rapid mixing property. And so let me briefly remind you, so what is the sine problem and stochastic Hamiltonians? So we say that a Hamiltonian is stochastic or sine problem free if it has real matrix elements in the standard basis and all of diagonal matrix elements are non-positive. And stochastic Hamiltonians have several nice properties. For example, we can choose the ground state such that all amplitudes are real and non-negative. And for any temperature, the thermal Gibbs state has a real matrix with non-negative matrix elements. And well-known examples of stochastic Hamiltonians are a particle moving in a potential, a system of interacting bosons, which can hope on some lattice, and quantum ferromagnets. And typically, Hamiltonian is non-stochastic if it involves a magnetic field or or it describes a system of fermions. So our strategy will be to cure the sine problem using a construction proposed almost 30 years ago by Zeperle and others. And so we shall map our initial k-local Hamiltonian H to a stochastic Hamiltonian F, which is called a fixed knot Hamiltonian. This construction has several nice properties. So first of all, H and F have the same ground state. The energy gap, spectral gap of F is at least as large as the gap of H. The matrix of F in the standard basis is sparse and efficiently computable. But computing matrix elements of F requires a subroutine for computing ground state amplitudes. And this is okay because we assume that we have a strong simulator that does the job. Informally, this fixed knot Hamiltonian F is constructed by setting to zero all off-diagonal matrix elements of H that create the sine problem. And I will explain this in a moment. And then we have to renormalize diagonal elements of H in a certain way in order to preserve the ground state. And this is a formal definition. The details are not too important, but you can see that we divide all off diagonal matrix elements into two subsets. S plus are elements that create sine problem. This thing is positive, and S minus are remaining elements where we don't have sine problem. So we set to zero all elements in S plus. We do nothing to elements in S minus, and then we renormalize diagonal elements. And this expression depends on ratios of ground state amplitudes. this fixed knot Hamiltonian construction is very powerful because it applies to essentially any Hamiltonian. But the drawback is that we need a strong simulator for ground state amplitudes. And there is a more recent line of work initiated in this paper by Marvian, Lidar, and Hen that shows how to cure the sine problem by a local unitary change of basis on each qubit. And these methods are more practical because they don't require strong simulator. But we apply only to restricted classes of Hamiltonians. And sometimes we can only ease the sine problem without completely curing it. Okay, so then then basically we take this stochastic fixed node Hamiltonian F, and we want to sample the ground state of F, which is the same as ground state of H, using Metropolis type Markov chain. And this chain is described by a matrix of transition rates G. So basically each matrix element of G between X and Y is the rate of transitions from state Y to state X per unit of time. So at each time step T, we have a probability distribution by T of X, and the time evolution is governed by this differential equation. And in the limit of large evolution time, we can show that we converge to the desired ground state distribution. For technical reason, we have to work with continuous time Markov chain. So basically, the unit of time is dictated by the norm of fixed node Hamiltonian F. And because fixed node construction is non-unitary, we don't have control over the norm of F. It can be arbitrarily large, and this is why we prefer to work with continuous time. So first of all, we can show that this Markov chain is rapidly mixing. So if we look at the distance between fixed point distribution P and distribution obtained by evolving the chain for time T, then this distance becomes exponentially small if evolution time is larger than mixing time, which is inversely proportional to spectral gap of fixed node Hamiltonian. And we know that it is at least as large as energy gap of our initial Hamiltonian H. And this initial state X in is just the state at time equals zero. And this is a good news because if the gap is inverse polynomial, we only need to evolve the chain for polynomial time. And we simulate this Markov chain using a standard Gillespie algorithm. And this algorithm generates random trajectories like the one shown here. So we start at time equals zero from our initial state. Then we make transition to the next state, x1. And we advance time by a random variable, delta t, which is sampled from this certain exponential distribution. And the probability from which we choose the next step is controlled by this matrix of transition rates G. And we keep repeating this transition until the time reaches the final value t. The key difficulty here is to show that the number of transitions we have to make is not too big, because at each step we advance time by a random variable. It can happen that the number of transitions becomes very large. And so this is our final result. So basically it gives an upper bound on the cost of sampling from the ground state probability distribution with some given precision epsilon. So capital T is the number of times we query strong simulator that computes ratios of ground state amplitudes. And you can see that T scales polynomially with all parameters. So there is no dependence on this sensitivity, which we had before. But there is one caveat, is that our algorithm requires a special initial state, which we call a warm start. And we can prove that such warm starts always exist. And the algorithm can efficiently check whether a given initial state is a warm start, but we don't know how to efficiently find this warm start. Leaving aside this caveat, somehow this is an efficient reduction from weak to strong simulation. Okay, and then in the last few minutes, I will show you some numerical results. So we implemented our algorithm to sample ground state of particular Hamiltonian, which is called Haldane-Shastri Hamiltonian. It describes a chain of n qubits with periodic boundary conditions. And we have this long-range Heisenberg-type interactions, and interaction strength decays as a power law. This model is exactly solvable, and it is critical, and it falls into universality class described by certain conformal field theory. And it's easy to check that this Hamiltonian has a sign problem. It is not stochastic. And in the paper, we show that the sign problem cannot be cured by any local change of basis. And the reason why we picked this particular Hamiltonian is because there is a simple expression for ground state amplitudes. So this Hamiltonian has non-degenerate ground states. It's separated from excited states by energy gap, which scales as 1 over n. And we can efficiently compute ground state amplitudes up to overall normalization. But this is fine because we only need ratios of amplitudes. We start with Haldane-Shastri Hamiltonian, then we map it to fixed knot Hamiltonian F. What we empirically observed is that this mapping to fixed knot Hamiltonian amplifies the spectral gap. So instead of 1 over n scaling, we get energy gap that scales as inverse power of n, which is strictly smaller than 1. And this is a good news because remember that the runtime of our algorithm is controlled by the spectral gap of a fixed knot Hamiltonian. So we want this gap to be as large as possible. So this plot shows a comparison between two-point correlation functions for Pauli Z operators, computing using our sampling algorithm and using exact solution of the model. So orange is exact solution and blue is our sampling algorithm. And the system size ranges between 20 qubits and 56 qubits. And you can see that our sampling algorithm achieves roughly 3 digits of precision across the board. And here we look at nearest neighbor spins. But the story is similar if we increase separation between spins, like 5 and 10. So it means that our algorithm can accurately reproduce long-range correlations present in the ground state of this model. Yes, so just to conclude, I started with the question, can we efficiently simulate a measurement of a quantum state given a subroutine for computing amplitudes, or perhaps ratios of amplitudes. And I showed that the answer is yes for output states of polynomial-sized quantum circuits, and with certain caveats for ground states of local Hamiltonians with inverse polynomial spectral gap. And there are a few open questions. So first, it would be nice to find more applications of this gate-by-gate sampling algorithm. And one application that I didn't have time to discuss is computing so-called forelation, which is a correlation between a Boolean function and its Fourier transform. And it was previously known that this forelation can be efficiently computed for quadratic Hamiltonians, for quadratic polynomials. And our gate-by-gate algorithm can compute forelation for cubic polynomials. Then it would be nice to find some other reductions from weak to strong simulators that somehow exploit structure of a quantum state. And so perhaps the most difficult question is, can we perform a weak simulation without computing amplitudes at all? So can we sample quantum state directly somehow? And one step in this direction was done in this nice paper by Zurel, Okay, and Rausendorf. They proposed a hidden variable model that can simulate universal quantum computation. But unfortunately, or fortunately, it is not known if this hidden variable model can be converted to efficient classical algorithm. And let me stop here. Thank you very much for attention.
Lots of time for questions.
Yes. You know, in the fixed node method, I mean, the method is variational. Okay, and not only is variational, but you know, in principle, you use the idea of important sampling. So you're using the nodes of a particular state that you know is pretty close, and that's, you know, it's a very nice property. You can move the nodes, etc., etc. In your case, you are defining this fixed node Hamiltonian that is not obvious to me unless you explain. Okay, that is going to lead to a variational solution, and the other thing is that apart from this warm thing that you mentioned, there is nothing that indicates you're using important sampling.
Okay. Yes.
So what? Because you're calling fixed node, that is not really fixed node.
Yes. I totally agree. So the original paper by Cepperly and others defined this fixed node Hamiltonian in a situation when we don't know the exact ground state, which is kind of the practical setting. And we replaced ground state by a variational state, which ideally should be a good approximation of the ground state. And what we showed is that regardless of how you choose this variational state, ground state energy of the fixed node Hamiltonian is, I believe, it's upper bound on the exact ground energy.
Okay, and I can see the proof because it must be tricky. Because you see, if you try to do, for example, I mean, fixed phase is also variational on the continuum, but if you put on the lattice and you take a different basis, okay, it turns out that it's not variational, even in the fixed node case. Okay, so it's tricky. You have to change the Hamiltonian to make it variational. It's similar to what you did in some way. This re-normalization got some of this flavor. So it must be tricky how you're doing the thing to show that this is an upper bound.
Yes. But here we have an extra power because we have access to this subroutine that computes exact ground state amplitudes. For example, computing ground energy of a Hamiltonian is trivial if you have access to such subroutine. Maybe it's not entirely trivial, but you can easily express ground energy as a certain linear combination of ground state amplitudes. But our task here is sampling the ground state, so it's slightly different from what was considered in this original paper by Zeppelin.
And important sampling, you are not exploiting that thing apart from the worm state. So how can you implement this important sampling, you know, generating not just a string that is worm, but, you know, maybe something else that is closer to the solution? It's going to converge faster, for sure.
I think in some sense this continuous time Markov chain that we use here is important sampling, but I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Hello. Sorry, can I?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a question about, like, I don't know, for instance, embedding a hard problem, like an MP hard problem in the diagonal part of the Hamiltonian, and then adding maybe some quantum fluctuations, right? Like small quantum fluctuations. Then you're saying that if you have access to the ground state, then you can sample efficiently, right? And I'm wondering, so where is the hidden, like, because that would, in principle, allow you to solve the MP hard problem, right? Like, if you have very small, say, quantum fluctuations on top. And then I'm wondering if, like, where is the, the catch in some sense? Is it in the warm start or in the fact that you have a solution to the ground state problem? I don't know if I'm making myself clear.
Yes, so I think what you propose is to take diagonal Hamiltonian that encodes some NP hard problem and
right.
a small perturbation such that ground state is spread over all NP strings.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we can use our, if we have subroutine for computing ground state amplitudes, we can find ground state of original NP hard Hamiltonian.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, so maybe this is not possible, and maybe this is the reason why our sampling algorithm requires this warm start initial state that we don't know how to find, but we can efficiently verify if a given string is a warm start.
Isn't there also the possibility that the if you do the perturbation so that it's stochastic, then what can happen is that those amplitudes that you added some non-zero amplitudes by adding this perturbation, but the being able to compute those to a high degree of precision like that's required for the algorithm here, that can
uh-huh.
towards the solution of the computer problem, I think.
Right. Yeah. Sure. Could be. Is he okay? Yeah, great. Thanks. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry. So another thing that was not clear to me, because when you start talking about this fixed node Hamiltonian, you even said that this was K-local. We start from K-local. But then they had the Haldane-Shastri or Shastri-Haldane model. I mean, it's long range. I mean, so it's not, I mean, it's K infinity, please.
Oh, sorry. I think there is a confusion in terminology. So when complexity theorists say Hamiltonian is K-local, they don't mean that it's geometrically local. They just mean that we have interactions acting on at most K qubits per time, but these qubits can be very far apart. So for Haldane-Shastri Hamiltonian K equals to to body or K body.
Okay.
Okay, if there aren't any further questions, let's thank Sergei.
Thank you very much.